Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, June 2nd, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you had a great week and a great weekend. I'm recording this episode right after GCW Cage of Survival 3, so we do have a brand new GCW World Champion. We've technically had a couple new GCW World Champions, maybe even a few, depending on how legitimate everything was based on what we just saw. We got a lot to talk about when it comes to GCW. We got a lot to talk about just this weekend in general. I mean, this was a huge weekend for combat sports. Big GCW weekend with them having Tournament of Survival, Cage of Survival, and JCW After Hours 4. Also, big weekend for MLW with Battle Riot. We had UFC for all you MMA fans. We had Islam Makhachev retaining his lightweight championship over Dustin Poirier. A big fight. You know, there was a few big fights on the pay-per-view last night. Also had Deontay Wilder getting knocked out in the world of boxing. So, I mean, huge combat sports weekend. There's probably plenty of stuff I'm missing as well. But a lot to talk about on today's show, especially when it comes to Game Changer Wrestling and MLW. So, yeah, just huge weekend, huge set of results. And as I mentioned before, you're getting this episode late Sunday night because I'm recording it, as I said, pretty much right after Cage's Revival ended. So, let's go through the topics and jump into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for GCW Tournament of Survival 9 and Cage of Survival 3, JCW After Hours 4, MLW Battle Riot, NXT Level Up, NWA Power, and I'll wrap up today's episode with some Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers. So I'll give you all a spoiler alert and I'll also put the time in the description below. So just look for the timestamps, skip ahead, or just turn the episode off early if you want to remain spoiler-free on Ring of Honor. So that all said, got a lot to get to, big results, a lot of big stuff happening this weekend, and the best way I think it makes sense for me to go through these, I'm going to start with GCW, but I'll do GCW, JCW, then back to GCW. I'll do the order that those shows took place, just because that makes the most sense as I'm reading them through. I'm going to have a lot of thoughts on the main stuff that happened over the weekend, so I'll probably elaborate a lot on that. And, you know, I'll probably talk a lot about MLW Battle Riot as well, and then we'll get to the other topics. But, as I'm sure a lot of you know who are listening to this, I've been saying something for a while. And, you know, just saying. We'll get to all of this, all right? So, we're going to start off with GCW Tournament of Survival 9. We're just going to say TOS 9. Here on out, because that's way easier. TOS 9, this was from the Showboat in Atlantic City, New Jersey. That's where all the GCW and JCW shows took place. This was a weekend that had a show on... Well, technically, we had the June 1st show for TOS 9, and then we had June 1st, but like really, really late at night for JCW After Hours. And then we had today for June 2nd. They also had the Deathmatch Hall of Fame in there as well. So, once again, very, very big weekend. I would also recommend, for those of you who missed it, check out Jimmy Lloyd's induction speech for Marcus Crane in the Deathmatch Hall of Fame. That was a really, really great speech. Definitely want to give that a shout out and have y'all check that out. But as far as the results go, we're going to start off with TOS 9. This was from... technically from yesterday, but it feels like way longer ago at this point. So much has happened since then. But we're going to start off with the TOS tournament, and I'll tell you when any non-tournament matches happen. I think there was just the one non-tournament match in here. So, started off with Yuki Ishikawa over Ultra Mantis Black, and I'll also do the best to describe the finish of these matches, but obviously it's going to be impossible for me to do that justice with all the craziness that you see in these type of death matches and like the innovative weapon contraptions that they put together and stuff. But I'll do my best to kind of paint a picture of the ending of each match for y'all at the very least. The finish here was, I call it a death penalty because that's what Akira calls it. But basically like a lifting reverse DDT, but we're going to call it a death penalty. We had Ishikawa hitting a death penalty on Ultramantis Black, through a bunch of light tubes on a big plank of wood for the three count. Cool to see Ultra Mantis in this too. He's been around for a really long time, like at least 20 years or so since I've known of him. So really cool to see him as a part of this. Once again, Ishikawa over Ultramantis with a death penalty through tubes on wood. For that, we had... Oh, and by the way, technically that was a House of Horrors death match. I'll try to give you the name. These are all death matches. I mean, you can call them whatever you want. These are all death matches. The next one we had was a first-round match. This is a Swinging Fences of Death match where Hidoshi Kimitami defeats Big F and Joe. The finish of this one is Kimitani hitting a backdrop driver through a... through a glass pane in the corner for the three count. After that, we had a first round DDT death match. This was Brandon Kirk over Shunma Katasama. The finish of this one was Kirk hitting a psycho driver through a bunch of light tubes onto open chairs for the three count. After that, we had a first round TOS match where this one is a death match. This is John Wayne Murdoch over Slade. The finish of this one was Slade threatening the referee, threatening to stab him with a light tube. And while he's threatening the ref, JWM slides up behind him, small package, gets a handful of the jeans for extra leverage for the three count to advance. After that, we had a non-tournament match. This is a four-way. Cole Radrick defeats Alec Price, Jordan Oliver, and Marcus Mathers. The finish here was Little Sebastian's curse onto Mathers by Cole Radrick with a three count. After that, we had a second round match in TOS 9. This is a Made in Japan death match where Yuki Ishikawa defeats Hidoshi Kimitani. The finish of this one was a reversal of a backdrop driver into kind of like a crucifix type pin for the three count. So Ishikawa advances. After that, we had another second round match in TOS. This is a Contraptions of Death match. John Wayne Murdoch defeats Brandon Kirk. The finish of this one was JWM hitting Kirk with a superplex through a big contraption. It was like this fence that was full of light tubes. And he just goes all the way through all of them. Or they both really go through all of them. And Brandon actually kicks out at two. But then JWM floats through that right into a Koji clutch. And Brandon Kirk passes out. The referee calls it off, and due to a technical submission, ref stoppage, JWM advances over Brandon Kirk. And then the TOS 9 finals, this is a death match. John Wayne Murdoch defeats Yushi Ishikawa. The finish of this was a swinging neck breaker off of a scaffold through two flaming tables by John Wayne Murdoch, and he is your Tournament of Survival 9 winner. So great to see JWM finally win TOS. It's something that he's been trying to do year after year. A guy who, I mean, I feel like if you ask most people who follow deathmatch wrestling, really to any degree, I mean, I follow it to, you know, more than most would, you know, as far as, you know, I cover it, you're here on this show and for the spotlight and stuff for Fightful. But I think even like someone who watches deathmatches like casually, I think most people who are familiar with the scene to any degree, is kind of what I'm getting at, we consider John Wayne Murdoch to be one of, if not like the best current day deathmatch wrestlers in the world. So really cool to see him kind of get his flowers by winning this tournament. You know, he's a former Ultraviolet champion with GCW, former ICW American Deathmatch world champion, you know, so John Wayne Murdoch, it's just really cool because at a certain point, like, you probably start running out of, like, accomplishments in the deathmatch world, you know what I mean? Like, he's won pretty much, like, all the major titles, and everyone already considers him to be, like, the guy. Where's there kind of to go from there? But this was one of the big things he needed to check off of his list, and he got it done. So, really cool to see John Wayne Murdoch win this tournament. And of all the people participating, if I were to pick a winner, you know, on paper based on who I would have wanted to see, you know, win this whole thing. You know, I think I would have went with Murdoch. It was cool to see Slade pop up, by the way, in the first round against JWM. Slade got a big pop. He was like a surprise entrant into this thing. Hadn't seen him in a while. Also, Brandon Kirk's one of my favorites, you know, just in general, and like the whole independent wrestling scene. And especially in like the deathmatch scene, I'm a really big fan of his. Both him and Casey Catal, I'm a very big fan of both of them. So, you know, it would have been really cool to see Brandon Kirk win this thing too. But this was JWM's year, and JWM versus Brandon Kirk was really cool to see. Really, really good. A tournament of Survival 9. I totally get if deathmatch wrestling isn't your thing, and if you have no interest in this, it is what it is, but I recommend everyone at least give it a chance, because you never know. I mean, I was someone who wasn't super into deathmatch wrestling before I started covering it. I'm somebody who, I don't really like, seeing blood, and, I don't like horror movies and stuff like that, you know what I mean? But I really respect the art of it and the people involved in it, and it's something that I've changed my mind pretty significantly on over the years. Once again, I also understand if it isn't for you, but also don't be super close-minded to it either. It's something you might actually really enjoy. And a lot of the people that are involved in it are actually like really, really nice human beings behind the scenes. So that also helps as well, because a lot of the people in the scene have been super cool to me over the years too. So, it all kind of goes hand in hand. And once again, cool to see John Wayne Murdoch as the winner of TOS 9. Moving on, got results for JCW After Hours 4. This show took place on the same day as TOS 9, but it took place at like midnight. And this is available for free on the GCW YouTube channel. I think I mentioned it before, but if I didn't, all the JCW shows are available for free on GCW YouTube. But GCW itself is available on Triller TV Plus as a part of their Triller TV Plus package. As far as the JCW results go, this is JCW After Hours 4. Started off with Marcus Mathers over Matt Tremont. This is a student versus teacher type match. For those who don't know, Marcus Mathers trained at H2O, which is Tremont's, Tremont's the trainer there. They have their own facility, that H2O facility. They do a lot of different independent shows. Their own shows as well for H2O, but a lot of different companies use that venue for some like the bigger independent shows. So it was really cool to see the two of these guys, go face to face, knowing their history. The finish of this one was Marcus Mathers hitting a Death Valley driver, followed up by a 450 splash off the top to get the 1-2-3. Marcus Mathers using a DVD is, there's layers to that. At least I think there is. The way that I saw it was he used that DVD because Matt Tremont is known to use the DVD, and Mathers hit him with his own move. Plus, it looks super impressive for Mathers, who obviously very well put together dude, but not like the biggest guy in the world. Still more or less kind of a kid. I mean, he's like in his really early 20s, I want to say. I don't know his exact age. I don't know if it's even on Cage Match. Let me see if I can find that real quick. The Cage Match says he's 21, so yeah, I would believe that. And for him to lift up Matt Tremont the way that he did, Mathers is still growing into his body. Really nice, feat of strength hitting that DVD. Then always looking nice coming off the top rope with that 450. One of the best 450s in the whole game, as far as I'm concerned. Marcus Mathers gets the win. Matt Tremont gets the mic afterwards and puts him over. Just says he's really proud of him. So, really cool to see, and big victory for Mathers over Tremont. After that, we had a dog collar match where Jordan Oliver defeated Griffin McCoy. I mean, the history of these two guys, this that would take, this entire episode of the weekend or go through all that. If you want to know their history, just listen to previous episodes of this show, because we've been covering it right here anytime anything really has to do with the two of these guys. The last time we talked about the two of them one-on-one, Griffin McCoy had defeated Jordan Oliver in JCW, and he got the win by tearing the ring apart and choking Jordan with, basically, like, he grabbed the turnbuckle and, like, the ropes. He, like, everything, came apart, and he wrapped it around Jordan's neck and pulled back, and Jordan got choked out unconscious. So this was a dog collar match. The finish of this one was very poetic because Jordan winds up beating Griffin here, with the finish being a clout cutter by Jordan, but a kick out of two by Griffin. Jordan then just takes the chain, wraps it around the neck of Griffin, just using that dog collar that they have for the match, and kind of like props his foot kind of on the back of Griffin and just pulls back, and Griffin goes out this time. So once again, poetic justice here. Jordan finishing Griffin in a very similar way to how Griffin, had finished him in the previous match. I don't necessarily have a problem with any of this outside of, I guess, like, I feel like as a fan of JCW, they've really been kind of like slow building Griffin McCoy for a while now, and it felt like he had kind of won the feud over Jordan finally by beating him in their last match, And then for Jordan to come back and beat Griffin, it's like, okay, well, so does Jordan won this whole thing now, and now is it over? And if it is, if it is, did you really need to put over Jordan? Because he was already the longtime JCW world champion, and he's really more so, like, he's always going to be a part of JCW, I feel like, because he's really important to the brand. And, you know, I feel like he loves being a part of it from what it seems. But Jordan also is going to be, you know, he's a big part of GCW as well. You know what I mean? Griffin has started to get some GCW looks, but I feel like they need to put, with all the time they've put into, you know, developing Griffin in JCW, specifically with Young, Dumb, and Broke in the storyline against Jordan Oliver over the last, year plus, almost probably 2 years now with, like, him feuding with Jordan. It's been a while since he broke off from YDMB at this point. And, of course, the history between the two of those guys goes back, like, you know, a decade, maybe longer than that. So my point is, I just kind of feel like, you know, it's just one of those things, like, does Griffin eventually beat Jordan in this thing, or was that the end of it? And if it was, why did they not elevate Griffin more out of this? That's just my feeling about it personally. But I'm a huge fan of Jordan Oliver, obviously. I've advocated multiple times, even now, I would say he should be one of the next GCW world champions. I think he should have, at this point in his career, already have been GCW world champion at some point. But, you know, this is what it is. I'm a huge fan of both these guys. Someone's got to lose. I just feel like Griffin kind of won this whole thing the last time we saw them do this. And now Jordan is kind of like, offset that, it kind of feels like. After that, we had Matt Mikowski over Jay Lyon. Y'all know me, Matt Mikowski is one of my favorite people in all of wrestling. I am a huge Matt Mikowski fan. He gets the win here over Jay Lyon with a top rope flying cross arm breaker for a tap out. Just beautiful looking stuff. Everything Mikowski does is super crisp. I love the way he incorporates his MMA style. He has an actual professional MMA background. The man beat Joe Schilling in an actual fight. I mean, if you don't know who Joe Schilling is, look it up. But great stuff here. Quick match, but you can see that they're really building Matt Mikowski and JCW the best that they can. He rarely ever loses. He had a really good run in the J Cup. He got some history with Masha Slamovich, who's the current JCW world champion. I could see Mikowski being the next JCW world champion. And if it was up to me, he would be. If they're not going to pull the trigger on Griffin McCoy, then I think the next, they got a lot of really good options in JCW, but, like, storyline-wise, Griffin makes the most sense because of how long they've invested in him. But as far as, like, people that I love just seeing wrestle, my favorite kind of stylistic wrestlers, and just human beings, like, I really would like to see Matt Mikowski as the JCW world champion. So they got options there. After that, we had a four-way match where Braden Toon defeated Charlie Tiger, The Mecca, and Jay Lucas. The finish here was Braden Toon hitting, it was like a double underhook bomb onto Lucas for the three count. And after that, we had the main event of the show, a hardcore match where Casey Catal defeats Broski Jimmy. I believe they were advertising Matt Mikowski versus Broski Jimmy heading into this. I'm not sure why things got switched up. But nonetheless, the finish here was Casey hitting an elbow drop off of a ladder while holding a chair onto Broski, crashed down on him. She covers him, 1, 2, 3. Case Catal gets the win. Moving on, got results for GCW COS. This is Cage of Survival 3, also out of the Showboat in Atlantic City, New Jersey. It's, of course, available on Thriller TV Plus. This happened, as I mentioned, just minutes before I started recording. So you're getting my fresh thoughts on this show and all the results, and I'll do my best to explain how everything went down. So the show opens. Joey Janela is attacked by two masked people in a hotel. I really hope they cleared that stuff with the hotel ahead of time. I hope that, because they're on security footage, because they have, you know, cameras in these hotels. These two masked men that look like they're, you know, walking down a hall with weapons and, you know, knocking on somebody's door and then, you know, being let in and then the guy's being dragged out of the room. I'd imagine it was cleared, or who knows. I just thought that was kind of funny as I was watching it. I was like, because I've worked at hotels before, and, like, if I would have seen that and not know what was going on, I would have probably called the police, because there's two guys, you know, completely concealing their identities, walking around with weapons up and down the halls, you know what I mean? But anyways, and also what was kind of funny is Joey Janela looks through the peephole before he lets these guys in. So, like, there's these two guys dressed head to toe completely in black. Can't see their faces. You can't recognize anything about them. One's holding a bat and the other was holding, I can't remember what the other one was holding, but both guys are holding weapons. And Joey Janela looks through the peephole and he's like, oh, what's up, guys? You know, it's like, opens the door, like, that's a normal thing, which that may just be a normal thing in Joey Janela's life anyway, to be fair. So anyway, the point of all of this is Joey Janela, who is supposed to be the last entrant in the gauntlet of survival for the GCW World Championship during this show in the main event. It's all, everyone, he's got people thinking, well, he's not going to make the show now because he's been attacked before the show started. To get the history of everything leading into all of this, you would have to listen to months worth of episodes of The Weekender to get caught up if you haven't been watching GCW's product and you just decided today to start listening to The Weekender, which I appreciate, by the way. If you're a new listener, thank you very much for tuning in. But if you're coming into this cold without any knowledge about how we got here in GCW between Janela and the world title and everything we're about to talk about, then you got a lot of catching up to do, but it's a really cool point to start at. It's almost like if you watched WrestleMania 40, Night 2, and it's the first time you ever watched WrestleMania, you'd be really confused as to what is going on and why it was so important that Cody won the title. But it'd be a really cool spot to kind of jump in and start watching wrestling, you know what I mean, and get caught up and figure out why everything is such a big deal and how things got to the way that they did. Nonetheless, Janela once again attacked in a hotel by two masked people before the show starts. The actual show starts with the first match of the night, which is Effie defeating Mance Warner. This is in Cage of Survival. This is a big blow-off to their feud that they've been going on for, I mean, it feels like the last year or so. They've been going back and forth, fighting one another. Mance Warner fighting, attacking, bloodying, you know, all of Effie's friends and all of his former, you know, members of the SGC. And it's been going on a long time. It's been going on not just in GCW, but the attacks and all this stuff, the collateral damage has bled into all across the indie scene, a whole bunch of different independent promotions. Mance has been attacking people with that screwdriver. And I mean, so this has been going on a long time and it felt like the end of it was going to go down at spring break, but Mance got the win there. It continued. And once again, get all the lore on all this. It'd take way too long to explain all of that. We are where we are. Effie finally gets the win over Mance Warner. The finish is a superplex through, it was like a triple layer of doors and a pane of glass that they tried to light on fire. They kind of lit on fire. But it was like a big triple door bridge of that Effie superplexed Mance through and then pinned him for the three count. So Effie beats Mance Warner. He has, you know, at least for now, it seems like he has won the feud and put Mance Warner behind him. And the friends of Effie all come out to the ring, the people that Mance Warner has attacked in the past that were there in the house. So, you know, we saw like Cole Radrick and Alec Price come out there. Ally Catch was out there. I'm not sure if Mander was out there, if he was preparing for the main event. Like Dark Sheik wasn't in the house. Justice wasn't in the house. But, you know, a lot of the people that were involved in this story come out and celebrate with Effie after he defeats Mance. And so I had successfully predicted that Effie would defeat Mance in this match, and that's exactly what happened. What else did I predict? Well, we will get to that in a little bit. The next match we had was Megan Bain over Speedball Mike Bailey. Finish of this one was Megan basically like catching a tornado kick, like reversing it before it could happen. Speedball is going for a tornado kick in the corner, and Megan Bain just hits him with a lariat kind of mid-move. Really, it looked real nice. She follows up with a really nice-looking choke slam and a really nice-looking tombstone pile driver for the three count. Said it plenty of times the last few weeks, but I haven't looked to follow up, but I believe Megan Bain is going to be going to AEW soon. But if not, I love that she's doing what she's doing on the indies. She continues to be undefeated in GCW, and she's putting on banger matches against everybody. So, of course, Speedball is known to do the same, right? Anytime you see Speedball, you know you're going to get a quality match. So put the two of them together. Great stuff. It's again Megan Bain over Speedball with Tombstone Piledriver. After that, we have the Garbage Daddies, Alec Price and Cole Radrick. They defeat Yuki Ishikawa and Hideyoshi Kamitani, both of them from Big Japan Pro Wrestling, and both of them, of course, competed at TOS 9, which I talked about just a moment ago. Ishikawa, by the way, was, of course, a finalist at TOS 9, and Kimitami is the Big Japan Deathmatch Champion currently. The finish of this match was a Doomsday Double Stomp, where Cole Radrick put Ishikawa on his shoulders, and Alec Price did a top rope double stomp onto Ishikawa, and then Cole did kind of like a back roll into the pin for the three count. I appreciate the finishing move. I think it's a pretty cool move in theory. They may want to work on a new finisher. I don't know if the Garbage Daddies, I feel like, are still trying to kind of figure out exactly, you know, figure out their move set, but their vibe is down for sure. Like, the fans are behind him. Cole Radrick's getting the Cole Radrick's my favorite wrestler chant in all of his matches right now. Alec Price puts on nothing but bangas, and if you don't believe that, you're a busta. I'm a huge fan of both of those guys, as y'all know. But I feel like they're still trying to kind of tweak and figure out like their tag team move set right now. But I appreciate it. Once again, I think it's a cool finishing move. I'm just interested to see if they incorporate other moves as well, because the issue they're going to have with that one is, like, it's going to be tough for Cole to put, like, a huge dude up on his shoulders for a move like that. And also, the double stomp is always going to be a sketchy move to double stomp somebody while they're up on somebody's shoulders like that. But once again, who am I to give tips to the Garbage Daddies? You know what I mean? Two of my favorites in the world. Y'all do your thing. They get the win in this one. Doomsday Double Stomp. After that, we had Matt Tremont over Big F and Joe. Finish of this one was Tremont hitting a Death Valley driver through a tube-covered door in the corner for the three count. Oh, I didn't mention, at TOS 9, Abdullah the Butcher was front row, and he dubbed Matt Tremont the Black Abdullah the Butcher, which was a bit confusing. We all appreciated the sentiment, and I know that Matt Tremont did as well. I mean, it's a big, you know, tip of the cap, and a big, you know, it's an honor to be dubbed, you know, a big name in the deathmatch scene, kind of the next somebody big, you know, by that person. You know, I think it's really cool that happened, but just the way that he said it just was kind of funny. After that, we had the main event of the show, which I will do my best to explain all the way through. So this is the Gauntlet of Survival. It's a straight up gauntlet match as far as, like, it's 1v1. Someone gets eliminated, the next person comes out. But then things got really interesting and kind of convoluted towards the end to get to where we are now. So the match starts off with John Wayne Murdoch against Casey Catal. JWM eliminates Casey by hitting her with a pile driver through a door for the three count. Next in is Manders. JWM eliminates Manders by hitting with a brain buster onto a pile of broken doors and chairs. Next in is Microman. Microman eliminates John Wayne Murdoch by reversing a brain buster attempt into a small package and pinning him. So Microman is still undefeated in a GCW ring up to this point in his career. That changes when Shane Mercer comes in. He eliminates Microman, hits a moonsault and battery, his backflip slam on Microman, which all, you know, it looks brutal on everybody he does it to. You know, it's always super impressive, like, kind of the larger the person is that he does it to. But when he has Microman, it looks like he's just killing him with that thing, because he can just throw him around. He teases that he's going to throw Microman, like, into the crowd at certain points, too, and still winds up hitting him with some nasty backbreakers and stuff. I know last week I compared Microman to Yoshihiko in certain ways, and what I meant by that was, like, with Yoshihiko, it's an inanimate object. So Yoshihiko is like an actual human-sized doll that, you know, one wrestler is wrestling himself, allegedly, you know? So, you know, who knows? I don't want to talk any tracks and have Yoshihiko come at me, you know what I mean? Cole Radrick has told me Yoshihiko is very stiff. But, you know, what I meant by that is, like, there are certain moves that Microman just cannot do without somebody, like, putting him in the position to do that move. But to be completely fair, Microman, when he goes out there, like, he can actually go out there and wrestle. Like, I wasn't giving him his full credit probably last week when I was saying what I was saying. If you watch this match where he's in there with Shane Mercer and when he's in there with JWM, like, he's in there hitting, you know, fluid wrestling moves, and he's moving around and running around and throwing punches and kicks and stuff like that. So, like, I want to give Microman his due. Last week I was making a comparison that makes sense for how I was explaining it, but at the same time, like, I didn't want to undervalue how good Microman actually is. So I just wanted to put that out there as well this week. But obviously I'm a big Microman fan, but he did get eliminated by Shane Mercer, Moonsault, and Battery. After that, Jordan Oliver enters the match. Jordan Oliver eliminates Shane Mercer. The finish there was Jordan getting hit by a Moonsault and Battery off the second rope, but kind of floating through it into a small package and pinning Shane Mercer. After Shane gets pinned, he hits Jordan in the back with a chair and then lawn darts him into the ring post on the outside. So, you know, Mercer essentially continued to attack Jordan and threw him back into the ring. And that leads to Charles Mason coming out next for the match. He eliminates Jordan Oliver by reversing a clout cutter and choking him out with his belt and then hitting him with the tombstone piledriver for the 1-2-3. Up next is supposed to be the last entrant, Joey Janela, coming out to the match. Janela is nowhere to be found because he was attacked before the show. Cardona says that Janela has 10 seconds to enter the match, and he's on 9, and before he can get to 10, Nick Gage's music hits. Nick Gage enters the match, and he eliminates Charles Mason with a choke breaker. He celebrates as the new GCW World Champion. Don't know if this is legitimate or not. I don't think it technically is, but try to get some clarity on that in the coming days. But Nick Gage, people are celebrating as the new GCW World Champion. Matt Cardona grabs a microphone, who of course is the GM of GCW, and the whole reason this match is even happening, and the whole reason Blake Christian was, you know, stripped of the title is Cardona stripped him of the title because Blake Christian is doing Best of Super Juniors and couldn't make the show. Cardona announces that Broski Jimmy is also in this match, and he's the next one to enter. So now we have Broski Jimmy taking on Nick Gage. The finish here is Sepp DeLander running in and hitting a low blow onto Gage. Jimmy Lloyd hits Nick Gage in the head with a bundle of light tubes and then hits radio silence for a 2 count. Jimmy then spears Nick Gage through a door in the corner and then hits another radio silence for the 3 count. Everyone's celebrating Jimmy Lloyd as the new champion. So everyone thinks, you know, Broski Jimmy is leaving tonight as, you know, GCW champion. Once again, don't know if this title reign is legitimate or not, because next, Joey Janela winds up actually entering the match. He comes in, hits a super kick on Jimmy Lloyd, dumps Sepp DeLander to the outside, hits Jimmy Lloyd in the head with a belt, and then goes up top, hits a top rope double stomp, 1-2-3. Joey Janela is officially, I believe, the GCW World Champion. He wins Gauntlet of Survival. So Joey Janela, as far as I'm concerned, up to this point, technically speaking, Joey Janela is the GCW World Champion and the only official GCW World Champion in that specific match. Now that the match is over and Janela is celebrating, Cole Radrick comes out with his brass ring, which he won in that ladder match. And that was a spring break. He basically is going to cash this ring in because Janela's so hurt from being attacked and everything that, you know, it's easy pickings for Cole. So Cole's going to come out and be the world champion. He tries to cash the brass ring in for his guaranteed title shot. And by the way, you know, for those of you who don't know, he can do that for the world title, the tag titles, any title in GCW. He's going for the world title here. And Sepp DeLander spears Cole through a door in the corner out of nowhere. And so Cole's out of commission. So Janela starts celebrating again, like, I'm still the champion. And then, just as I predicted months ago, I thought this was going to go down at Joey Janela's spring break, but we're getting it now. Exactly as I predicted, Joey Janela is your new GCW World Champion. He is celebrating in the middle of the ring. He finally did it, overcame the odds, and he is now officially the face of this company. And Mance Warner comes in, and he cashes in his do-or-die opportunity, which he won in that Royal Rumble months and months ago. And he has his guaranteed shot whenever he wants at the world title. He cashes it in. He hits Joey Janela in the back with a chair. He hits him with an implant DDT on top of the GCW world title belt. Pins him. 1, 2, 3. Mance Warner is officially the new, current, reigning, and defending GCW world champion. It finally happened. I've been calling for so long this exact scenario of Effie defeating Mance Warner in their feud, and later in the same show, Mance Warner beating specifically Joey Janela, who was going to have a Tommy Dreamer-esque, when Tommy Dreamer won the ECW World title, then lost it right away to Just Incredible. I've been calling this for a while, and it actually happened. I would like to be able to say it happened exactly as I predicted it. I got to be fair, I didn't predict Cole Ryder to, you know, try to cash in the brass ring. I didn't predict that Broski Jimmy and Nick Gage were going to both arguably, you know, maybe be the GCW World Champions, or at least make us think that they had also won those title, that title in that amount of time too. Didn't expect all of that to happen. But ultimately, the way this played out is what I called, and I'm glad we're at where we're at. And because it also, it's going to set the stage where Effie will probably eventually be the one to defeat Mance Warner. Because they can put their feud on ice for now, let Mance get a little bit of a run with the title, and then you can always circle back to Effie versus Mance Warner for that championship. And that's also another way where Effie could eventually become the GCW World Champion, because he should get a run with that title at some point as well. But I'm very happy to see Mance finally the GCW champion. It's been a long time coming for the Mancer. So, very, very happy to see it. And great stuff. Huge, huge weekend once again for Game Changer Wrestling. I'm very interested to see where they go next. And they didn't officially reveal the identities of the masked people that attacked Joey Janela. My initial prediction when I saw that happen was that it was the Garbage Daddies. I thought it was going to be a swerve where Alec Price and Cole Radrick are going to turn on, I didn't think they were going to help Mance in like the opening match, but I thought that they were going to attack Joey. We all expected Joey to show up in this match, you know, even though he was quote unquote taken out beforehand, we still expected him to show up. So I figured that Cole Radrick and Alec Price were going to be the ones behind the attack, and it was going to start up like a little new stable of like Mance Warner and the Garbage Daddies, because Cole Radrick still has the brass ring, and now they can use that as like a group to defeat Bounces Forever when they see the best opportunity. And then you would have the Garbage Daddies as the tag champions and Mance Warner as the world champion. You could still go that route potentially, but what throws it off a little bit there, you know, as far as it making sense, is that Cole was just about to cash in the brass ring. And why would he do that and willingly take, you know, a spear from SDL? Because up to that point, you can still make sense of it essentially saying that Cole and Alec Price basically turn on Effie because Effie basically let both of them get beat up so badly by Mance in recent weeks, because Effie couldn't attack Mance or this match wouldn't have happened. So there's a lot of layers to all of this. So I think the Garbage Daddies, it's still possible they could be behind it, but I also don't know if they're kind of alluding to like that it was Deathmatch Royalty. But I don't know, based on like the body types in the suits, it kind of looked like it might have been the Garbage Daddies. I didn't get a great look at them, but it looked like it could have been them. Anyways, a lot of good stuff from GCW and a lot to look forward to, as always, for Game Changer Wrestling going forward. Moving on. Got results for MLW Battle Riot. This is Battle Riot 6. This took place out of Atlanta, Georgia, in Center Stage, one of my favorite wrestling venues in the world. I go to all the GCW events there. Did not go to MLW, mainly because there was so much going on yesterday as far as, like, what I mentioned kind of at the top of the show. Like, I wanted to be with my family and my friends because, they all like to watch boxing, like to watch UFC. And then, some of them actually stuck around for some of this other stuff like GCW and MLW and stuff like that. So, like, it was one of those things where, like, I just wanted the whole day to be able to kick back, and whoever wanted to hang out, we hung out and watched stuff. So, anyways, wasn't there live, but it looked like it was a good time. And once again, I love the venue. This show is available for free on MLW's YouTube channel, and it seems like MLW, at least for the foreseeable future, is going to be on YouTube going forward. So we'll see how all that plays out. But I definitely appreciate free wrestling, for sure. So if you want to watch this show, just go check it out over on YouTube, on the MLW YouTube channel. These are the results, and this show happened yesterday on June 1st. Show started off with the MLW World Women's Featherweight title on the line. Jannai Kai defends and retains over Delmi Exo. The finish of this one was Selena comes out with her spray bottle. Cesar Duran is in the corner of Delmi Exo during the match. Selena tries to spray Cesar with the hairspray and winds up spraying Delmi Exo. Delmi had just hit a Delmi driver and like almost got the win right before this as well. But after getting sprayed in the eyes with the spray, that leads to Jannai hitting a kick, like a running kick in the corner for the three count. After that, we had a ritual combat match where Alex Kane, along with Faye Jackson and Mr. Thomas, defeated AJ Francis. The way that you win this match is there's a throne up on the top of the entrance ramp on the stage. You have to sit in the throne while the ref counts to 10, and your opponent cannot touch you at all before the end of the 10 count. Whenever it gets to 10, that person wins the match. Some of the quote-unquote elders were available, or I shouldn't say available. They were on the scene as well. They were also there live watching from the stage right next to the crown. The elders were Teddy Long and Mark Henry. This, I believe, is Mark Henry's first pro wrestling appearance since leaving AEW. I know he obviously does Busted Open and stuff, but as far as like the actual, another actual wrestling company, I believe this would have been his first appearance because he just announced he's leaving AEW just like the other day. So, pretty cool to see kind of how all this played out. The finish of the match was Alex Kane hitting a superplex onto AJ from the top rope through a table and then sitting down on the throne. AJ crawls up the entrance ramp and just can't make it there in time. Alex Kane wins, and he gets congratulations from both Mark Henry and Teddy Long. They put over Alex Kane, and the whole Bume Fight Club is out there to celebrate. Also, Alex Kane changed his look a bit recently as well, shaved off the mohawk. I like the look change. I like when guys, girls, anybody involved, like I like when people kind of freshen their look up, change things a little bit, tweak their characters and stuff. Just kind of, new kind of fresh coat of paint, you know what I mean? And Alex Kane, once again, put over big time in this match by everybody involved, as he should be. Alex Kane was a great MLW world champion for the time he was able to hold the title, but I think he should have held the title a lot longer. Like, personally speaking, I feel like he should still be the MLW world champion. Nothing against Kojima, who I'm about to talk about here in a second, but I feel like there's really still, at this point, no reason to have taken the title off Alex Kane. That's just me personally. After that, we had the aforementioned Satoshi Kojima defending the MLW World Heavyweight title over Filthy Tom Lawler. The finish of this one was Kojima hitting a standing lariato. Tom Lawler kicks out at 2, followed up by a Kojima running lariato for the 1-2-3. Love Filthy Tom's gear in this match. By the way, check it out. Very USA, very rock flag and eagle, as you would expect from Filthy Tom. Kojima, once again, as I mentioned before, like, nothing against him. It's really cool that he's, the first ever two-time MLW champion, the first ever double champ, along with Akamura being the current MLW tag team champion as well. It's cool to see, but, I feel like he's somewhat of a placeholder for that title for the next person I'm about to talk about winning the Battle Riot. So we had the Battle Riot match itself. This is 40 people, and basically what I'll do is I'll just give you the order of all the eliminations for this match up until the winner. We had Mystico eliminating Jesus Rodriguez. Star Jr. eliminates Jimmy Yang. Tom Lawler eliminates Rudigo. Star Jr. eliminates Mystico. Tom Lawler eliminates Akamura. Josh Bishop and Tom Lawler collectively eliminate Starr Jr. Paul Walter Hauser eliminates Tom Lawler. Yes, the actor, Paul Walter Hauser, who's actually been doing pretty well for himself in all the wrestling matches and scenarios I've seen him in. I've got to give him credit for that. Definitely a big fan. Akira and Kwan both eliminated. We had Minoru Suzuki eliminates Adam Priest. Cool to see Adam Priest in MLW. I hope he gets more looks from that company. One of the best in-ring wrestlers in the world. Super slept on. I talk about him all the time on this show, obviously, but want to see more from Adam Priest out there. Minoru Suzuki eliminates Josh Bishop. Paul Walter Hauser eliminates Slim J. Good to see Slim J out there. You know, obviously, he was a part of Ring of Honor for a long time and recently as well with Ring of Honor. Recently departed there. Popped up in action wrestling sense, but good to see him in MLW. We had Bad Dude Tito eliminating Bobby Fish. Paul Walter Hauser eliminates Scotty Riggs. Great to see the clap. Great to see Scotty Riggs out there. Me and Jeremy interviewed Scotty Riggs pretty recently for the spotlight on Fightful. Have so much respect for like the life turnaround that Riggs has had. I'm a huge fan of his, so it was just great to see this. We had Chris Danger eliminating Violent J. Whoop whoop. Bad Dude Tito eliminates Mr. Thomas. Brett Ryan Gosselin eliminates Jake Crist. Sammy Callahan eliminates Paul Walter Hauser. Mads Kruger, a.k.a. Cruel, eliminates Manders. Manders eliminates Cruel. Double elim there. We had Alex Kane eliminating the Mass Assassin. Matt Riddle eliminates Ernest the Cat Miller. Love seeing the cat out there. If you wanted some of the best quotes I think me and Jeremy have ever gotten in an interview ever was when we interviewed the cat fairly recently. So check that out if you want to, too. I've got mad respect for the cat. Matthew Justice eliminates Brett Ryan Gosselin. Alex Kane eliminates C.W. Anderson. Chris Danger eliminates Kim Chi. Matt Riddle eliminates Bad Dude Tito. Minoru Suzuki eliminates Dr. Cornwallis. Shane Mercer eliminates Andrew Everett. Shane Mercer eliminates Shug D. Sammy Callahan eliminates RSP, Ricky Shane Page. Arachnaman comes out to the ring, and it was... oh my gosh, I'm blanking on who Arachnaman was. Oh, it was Tom Lawler. It was Tom Lawler. But if y'all remember Arachnaman from WWF, it was that suit. Timothy Thatcher eliminates Chris Danger. Matthew Justice eliminates Shane Mercer. Sammy Callahan eliminates Matthew Justice. Timothy Thatcher, Davey Boy Smith Jr., and Minoru Suzuki eliminate Alex Kane. This brings us down to the final four in the match. The final four being Matt Riddle, Sammy Callahan, Davey Boy Smith Jr., and Timothy Thatcher. All four of those dudes are, like, they've gone over the top rope. They're all fighting one another on the ring apron, like, just trying to pull one another off to the outside. Davey Boy and Thatcher both double eliminate each other at the same time, and Matt Riddle is kind of able to eliminate Sammy Callahan all at the same time as that happening. And I figured it'd come down to Riddle and Callahan based on the build for this match, you know, in this show leading up to it. The kind of like the mini feud that the two of them had heading into Battle Riot. And Matt Riddle does officially win Battle Riot. So pretty predictable as far as the outcome. I think we all expected Matt Riddle to win this. And I expect Matt Riddle to defeat Kojima for the championship. You know, I think it'll be pretty cool to see the two of them go at it. You know, it's kind of like a dream match. You never expected to see Kojima versus Riddle. But once again, personally, I don't know why they wouldn't have just gone with Alex Kane versus Matt Riddle. Stylistically, I think it would be even better of a match. But I do fully expect Matt Riddle to be the next MLW World Champion. Moving on, got results for NXT Level Up. This show aired on May 31st. I watched it on Hulu, so that's where I recommend you watch it as well. We had three matches and an interview segment. Show started off with Uriah Connors, the former Brogan Finley, defeating Cutler James. The finish of this was a top rope elbow drop by Connors for the three count. After that, we had an interview segment where Tyson DuPont and Tyreek Igwe are basically talking about how they're pound for pound strongest and most explosive tag team. They've beaten the No Quarter Catch Crew in the past. Here they're going to be wrestling in the main event of this show. So they got some confidence going into this match. The next match we have was Stevie Turner defeating Kendall Gray. The finish on this one was basically the stroke, Jeff Jarrett style, for the 1-2-3. And then the main event of the show, we had Charlie Dempsey and Miles Bourne of the No Quarter Catch Crew. I always have a hard time saying that. It's like a tongue twister of a group name for me, No Quarter Catch Crew. Charlie Dempsey and Miles Bourne defeat Tyson DuPont and Tyreek Eague. Basically what happens here at the end of the match is Damon Kemp does a save for Bourne. Like, Bourne's kind of like hanging outside the ring, and he kind of pulls him apart from Eague. It's really hard to explain kind of what this looked like, but essentially this opens it up for where Charlie Dempsey can hit a bridging German suplex and pin Tyreek Eague. So No Quarter Catch Crew gets to win in the main event here. And the three remaining members being Miles Bourne, Charlie Dempsey, and Damon Kemp, you know, stand tall in the middle of the ring to end the show. As I'm sure all of you know at this point, Drew Gulak no longer with the WWE. He was essentially like the leader of this group, but they are going to continue to go on without him, it seems like. I think they have a good thing going, though. I mean, I like Miles Bourne the second that I saw him the first time. I think the guy's going to be a big star for a lot of reasons in the WWE system. Like, I think he's a guy who eventually kids are going to get really behind. Like, I think he's going to be a big star for them. Charlie Dempsey, long-term, I mean, he's William Regal's son, for God's sake. This guy's going to be with them forever if he can just, like, stay healthy, because he's going to put on great matches, and he's always going to be something a little different. And, I mean, Damon Kemp, I have no idea if I don't want to say anything to, like, discredit Damon at all, but I have no idea if this guy would have, like, gotten a shot in the WWE if he wasn't Gable Stevenson's brother. I have no idea, you know what I mean? Because there was so much hype behind Gable, and it was just kind of like, well, we also have his brother, and his brother's still there, Gable isn't, and his brother continues to get better and better and better, and we've been singing the praises of Damon Kemp for, like, years, it feels like, at this point, because he's been putting in good work on Level Up, and now he's got a good character to go along with it and a good group. This is what NXT Level Up is all about and why the show's important, you know what I mean? So, like everything about this episode, as per usual, and I recommend y'all check it out. Just go check it out over on Hulu, or I think it's on Peacock as well. Moving on, got some results for NWA Power. This show aired on May 28th. It's available on the CW app or the CW website, and these are the results. We had Tom Latimer over Jake Sterling. He had a Crockett Cup first round match where Daisy Kill and Talos defeated the Stu Crew, the team of Dylan Stewart and Zach Stewart. We had another Crockett Cup first round match for the Southern Six, the team of Kerry Morton and Silas Mason, defeat the Slime Balls, the team of Sage Chance and Tommy Rant. In the main event of the show, we had the NWA World Television Championship on the line. Max the Impaler defends and retains their title, along with Father James Mitchell in their corner, over Jake Dumas. So another, you know, solid episode of NWA Power. They're continuing on with the Crockett Cup. It's a long tournament. Unfortunately, as I mentioned last week, unfortunately, like, this is all pre-taped stuff, and, like, the Crockett Cup itself has already happened. So, you know, if you're a fan of the NWA, you probably already kind of know where all this is heading and who's going to win. But if you're following along week by week, that's where we're at right now. Just first round, things just kind of continuing to get cooking. You know, shout out to Max. I mean, I believe they were injured up until recently, so good to see them back. But also, once again, with how, like, the NWA tapes stuff, my timeline's always really off with certain things as well. NWA has something good with Max for sure. And they also set up some other stuff going forward. Like, Joe Alonzo is going to defend the junior title against Alex Taylor soon. We found out Tiffany Nieves and Rika Tahaka are going to be taking on La Rosa Negra and Ruthie J soon. So, like, they set some stuff up for the future as well. But, you know, as far as, like, banger shows, not a whole lot to talk about. Kind of par for the course as far as NWA goes. Not necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, just kind of like another NWA Power episode. And still early on in the Crockett Cup. Moving on, we're going to do some Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers to wrap this episode up. So, spoiler alert. If you do not want Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers, go ahead and turn the episode off right now. Appreciate y'all listening. Please hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com before you leave. And as always, I appreciate you for listening. And I appreciate everyone who's going to stick around as well right now for some quick Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers. I have not read these yet, so I'm going in cold. And if there's something worth elaborating on, I will do so. So spoiler alert, these are Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers coming at you right now. If you do not want these, look at the timestamp on the description below. These spoilers are from May 30th, and they are courtesy of F4W Online. That is, of course, Figure 4 Wrestling Online. These were from the Collision tapings, and these are the results. There's a side note here. It says, during the ROH taping, they did a backstage segment where Strong, I'm assuming Roderick Strong, got Tony Khan to agree to an AEW World title match against Swerve Strickland for Dynamite. If that's true, that's very interesting that they're setting this up on Ring of Honor. It's also interesting because Roderick Strong just lost his international title fair and square to Will Ospreay. Don't super love the idea of people losing, like, quote-unquote mid-card titles, or however you view the AEW titles. Who knows the hierarchy at this point between the TNT title, international title, continental title, FTW title, I mean, so on and so forth. There's so many titles in AEW. And then they have the whole set of Ring of Honor titles. I mean, don't even get me started on all that. The Trios titles, you have the Gun Club, Bang Bang Gang, whatever. They're holding 9 championship title belts between 3 people. It's insane. Anyways, I mean, Roderick Strong versus Swerve Strickland would be a banger match, and I'm looking forward to seeing that on Dynamite. It's just confusing why that'd be built on Ring of Honor or why Roderick Strong would get a world title shot coming off a loss. Hey, Christian Cage just got a title shot. He was coming off a loss, losing the TNT championship, and, you know, the next thing we know, he's challenging Swerve for the world title, so, you know. Who knows? And it's also one of those things where I don't know for sure, but, you know, I was covering 205 Live here on this show before it became NXT Level Up, and it's very possible that we would have seen Swerve Strickland versus Roderick Strong on 205 Live at some point. Just wild how much things change and also stay the same in wrestling, you know what I mean, over the years. As far as results here, looks like, all right, it says ROH Tag Team Champions, Undisputed Kingdom, of course, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. They defeat Shea Cabrera and Bad Dude Tito in a Proving Ground match. It says QT Marshall defeats Nick Camarado. Lee Johnson defeats PJ Black. The match was stopped due to injury. Black got injured after a corkscrew plancha, so that's too bad. It obviously wishes speedy recovery for PJ Black. Real veteran at this point. Y'all may remember him as was his first name Justin in WWE? His last name was definitely Gabriel. I think it was Justin Gabriel. It's been a long time. Dude was a part of the Nexus, had a really nice 450 splash. We had Red Velvet over Viva Van. ROH TV champion Billy Starks defeats Sandra Moon in a Proving Ground match. You know, love seeing that. I'm such a big fan of Billy Starks. It warmed my heart seeing her as the TV champion for Ring of Honor and just knowing everything she's going to accomplish in her career in the coming years. She's just getting started soon, which is wild because I feel like I've already been watching her for a long time because she started as a literal kid, which is just so crazy, but great to see. So shout out to Billy Starks as always. We have Marina Shafir, Alex Windsor, and Diamante over Abaddon, Lady Frost, and Layla Hirsch. 6 super talented women. I am very much looking forward to seeing this match. Marina Shafir has been doing a lot better, in my opinion, lately. Like, she's somebody who never really reached her full potential, even close to her full potential in the WWE system. But she's had some really good showings outside of the WWE, especially in, like, blood sport or, like, mixed rules MMA-type style presentation in those kind of matches, especially. Lady Frost is one of the most innovative wrestlers in the entire game, male, female, non-binary, whatever. Like, Lady Frost is worth watching and keeping an eye on. She hasn't even tapped her potential. Impact Wrestling should have done much more with her when they had the opportunity, in my opinion. You never know with stuff like, I don't know, behind the scenes and whatnot. I don't know why or why not a lot of this stuff does or doesn't happen, to be fair. But, like, from, like, the outside looking in, talent-wise, Lady Frost still hasn't even come close to what she's going to accomplish. I feel like she's going to be a massive star still. Layla Hirsch is one of my favorites to watch, too. Technically sound, just one of my favorite technical wrestlers in the game. Still to this day, I still recommend people check out her versus Camille for the NWA Women's World Championship from, it was already a couple years ago now, but huge stylistic difference in every, I mean, polar opposites, her and Camille, when they wrestled each other, and I thought they really pulled off something good. We had Harley Cameron over Trisha Dora, and we had what looks like the last match of the card. We have Top Flight, the team of Darius and Dante Martin, along with Action Andrade. They defeat Lance Archer and the Righteous, the team of Vincent and Dutch, the Dark Order team of Evil Uno, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds, and the Infantry team of Carly Bravo and Sean Dean, along with Dalton Castle. So that was a four-way trios match that Darius and Dante Martin and Action Andrade win. So those are the Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers. Looks like it's a lot of good stuff to look forward to, a lot of great talent. As I mentioned, you know, Trisha Dora there, one of my favorites. I always love seeing her hit that Lariat Tubman for the three count, but she takes an L in this set of results. And, you know, just that last match I mentioned alone, the four-way trios match, the amount of talent in that one. Like, shout out Alex Reynolds for finally getting an AEW action figure. That's long, long, long overdue. I feel like Lance Archer is still underutilized, which is crazy. You know what I mean? Like, he's been great for a long time with his size and his look and everything. I feel like they're always stop-starting his pushes and stuff. Carly Bravo and Sean Dean. Carly Bravo especially. Sean Dean's gotten a bit more shine because you've seen him a little more on AEW TV over the years and the stuff with MJF. But Carly Bravo is super talented and a guy that I'm always going to be a fan of. So a lot of good stuff here. And yeah, that's going to do it for the episode of the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com. Follow me on X at FightTalk_. Use code FightTalk on IndependentWrestling.tv and watch the spotlight on Fightful every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time with myself and Jeremy Lambert. That's over on the main YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fightful. Till next weekend, with professional wrestling.